Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome back. This is episode 303 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I am Sean Penrod, your host. I'm so happy that you are joining us today. We have a great guest lined up for you today, but before we dive into that, I want to say, oh my goodness, we have the 2018 Magic World Championship this weekend. So hope you are tuning into that. It's always fun when these big premier events come around. We get to see, you know, players at the top of their game playing Magic, and it's just, I love it. I just think it's so cool. So tune in to the Magic World Championship and see what's going on. I also want to say thank you so much to the patrons for supporting the show. Without you, this would not be possible. And also Paragon City Games, thank you so much for your support, for doing the prize support for the patron giveaway, as well as for the sealed leagues that we do, which actually our M19 sealed league is in full swing right now, so that's been a lot of fun. Anyways, that's really it for the top. I just wanted to acknowledge the Magic World Championship. I want to say thank you to Paragon City Games and the patrons of the show. And yeah, without further ado, let's bring in our great guest, sit down and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest is headed off to his first Pro Tour after qualifying through the RPTQ system. Fun fact, he's a proud owner of a foil popper cube. Coming to us from Davenport, Iowa, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Josh Collier. Josh, how are you doing today?
Good, and you?
Doing fantastic, thank you. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take it to the next level?
Yes.
Excellent. Sweet. Now, prodigy out there, if you want to connect with Josh, the best place to do that is on Twitter. He's at @agent_of_blight. So agent of blight on Twitter. So look him up there. That's the best way that you can say thank you, ask him any questions, follow up, you know, with him being on the show. We also snuck him into the Facebook group. So if you are a member of the Facebook group, you can likely find him there. But feel free to tweet out to him if you so desire. So Josh, we love learning about our guests outside of Magic before we do the whole Magic thing. So out there in Davenport, are you working, going to school? Is Magic full-time for you? Tell us a little bit about what's going on.
So I'm a full-time student at the University of Iowa. This is my first semester back in school. And I left my full-time job to do this.
To do school? And what are you studying?
Actuary science.
Is that it's life insurance, figuring out when people are going to die?
Yes.
All right. Cool. So that's like a whole degree?
You get a bachelor's degree and then you get licensed.
Cool. So let's see. Actuary science. Your Twitter is Agent of Blight. So we have like this whole like kind of like morbid thing going on. Like what's up with that?
Blighted agent.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I figured that. Cool. All right. Very nice. Neat. So what made you want to go into actuary science?
Well, it's a very boring. No one wants to do it, and it's very high in demand.
Got it. So they need people, and not a lot of people are going towards it. So cool.
Good pay, good job security.
Yeah. Very nifty. So are you from the Davenport area then?
Yes.
Okay, so born and raised in that area?
Yes.
Cool. And where did your competitive bug come from? So growing up, did you play sports or other games or –
I played video games growing up. I did a little sports in high school. I was competing with my older sisters a lot growing up, just in board games.
Nice. How many siblings do you have?
Two.
Very cool. And they're older, you said, both of them?
Yes.
Excellent. Well, that's fun. It's fun to hear kind of where our guests come from and some of the seeds that might have been planted at, you know, an early age for sure. And we'd love to go back in time with you and have you tell us the story of the first time you ever saw or played with Magic cards, because we love to get the origin of our guests.
Well, the first time I ever saw Magic cards, I was in high school. I was a member of the chess club. And those of us that did not play Magic would always be angry at those who were playing Magic in chess club. We said, chess club, it's not Magic club. Uh-huh. I'm here to play chess. And then the first time I played Magic, I was deployed in my unit to Afghanistan in 2012, and we were bored. So one of my roommates suggested we get Magic cards from Amazon, and we had them delivered, and we would play on the floor.
You had them delivered to Afghanistan?
Yes.
That is pretty cool. What service were you in?
The Marine Corps.
Awesome. Well, that's thank you for your service. Like I was in the Navy for active duty for 7 years before I got out a couple years ago. So that's pretty cool. So Marine Corps out in Afghanistan, got some Magic cards and played then. Wow, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. What would you consider to be your first set?
So the first cards I remember owning, I got a Dark Ascension intro deck. But the first set I played with at my local gaming store was Gatecrash.
Okay. So you came in Dark Ascension, but then started in the store at Gatecrash?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'd consider myself starting in Dark Ascension. Like, I just had the cards from the intro deck and then the casual escalation of Forest War that happens in a very small group.
So Gatecrash really is where you consider your first set?
That's when I got my DCI number.
Cool. All right. Very cool. And what's been your favorite set?
I think it has to be Kaladesh.
Really? Why is that?
That's when I really started competing more and more heavily into Standard. And I've just found most of my level ups and most of the in the competitive scenes that I do well, I've like just been a result of Kaladesh Blood.
Very cool. And along the same lines, what's one of your favorite cards?
Ongoing Investigation.
Ooh, that's new. So for those of us who don't know, what is it? What does it do? And why do you like it?
So Ongoing, it's been a while. It's a blue enchantment.
Yeah.
And whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you investigate, which was the Shadows of Innistrad mechanic. You make a clue token. You can pay 2 mana, sacrifice clue to draw a card. And then for 1 in the green, you can exile a creature card from your graveyard, investigate, and gain 2 life.
1 in the green. Yeah. Yeah, so it just did a lot. So why is that at the top of your list? Why is that one of your favorite cards?
I was brewing a Rug Delver list in Modern for the longest time, and that was my favorite sideboard card.
Very nice.
Just when you go turn 1 Delver, turn 2 Blind Flip, play Ongoing Investigation, hit your opponent for 3, and you create make a clue, it feels so good.
Excellent. Well, that's so fun. So Gatecrash first, Kaladesh favorite, Ongoing Investigation, pretty neat. So that's I love, again, hearing where you come from and why you like the things that you do. And you've had good success recently. We mentioned in the intro that you've actually qualified for the Pro Tour through the RPTQ system, which is pretty cool because there's many paths to the Pro Tour. And often we interview people who make top 8 of a Grand Prix and whatnot here on the show. But there is that RPTQ system that's out there, and people are doing well and making it, and you're one of them. And so we'd love to dive into that journey and kind of see what it took to get where you are, because several of us prodigies are right behind you, just a few steps, and we need to kind of get some insights into how you did what you did. So when you started getting more competitive with Magic, obviously we all learn the game and kind of do the kitchen table thing, but then when you started getting more competitive, what was an early challenge that you faced and how did you overcome it?
For a long time, I wasn't acquiring not all the standard cards, but I would typically, on the onset of a standard format, just pick 1 deck and play that for the season, which if anyone's grinded standard, they know that's not the best strategy. And I just like played several events with 1 deck, and then I kept losing. And I didn't think it was necessarily anything on my part. And so after that, I decided that I was just always going to play the best deck. And another a podcast I listened to, one of the hosts, you probably know him, Spencer, Stephen Hallen.
Yeah.
He likes to say that anyone that's good can top 8 a PPTQ with any deck. It doesn't matter. If you're good, you're going to top 8. But if you want to win, you have to also be playing a good deck then.
Interesting. Okay, is that kind of when you had the mental? I guess the switch went on. And you kind of shifted strategies.
Yeah, I had just decided that I was just going to play the best deck in standard. Like I had been top 8ing fairly consistently, but I had yet to convert.
Interesting. And then when you flipped over to that, that's when you started making it?
I started having more success during the Energy Red standard.
Okay, very cool. Man, that's neat. Okay. So, as opposed to just picking one standard deck and sticking with it, familiarizing yourself with the best deck and kind of shifting within the season or within the standard season is what you recommend and what has worked for you. So how do you get familiar with those different kind of decks? You know, the best deck is shit, and it's not like week to week, I'm assuming, but you know, it's still a couple times per format. So how do you get used to playing such, you know, a wide range of decks?
You just can't be afraid to just pick up a new deck and play it. One of the things is a lot of, especially in small formats like standard, a lot of the decks in particular, like aggro, mid-range, control archetypes, they're very similar. Just all the cards and the context is different.
Okay.
So if I'm picking up a new deck before an event, I'll sit down, I'll think about the deck, its place in the format, the context in which the games are going to be played, and I'll like look at a sideboard, and I won't just leave the sideboard. I'll try to think about the person who built the deck, what their plans were, watching streams and coverage, listening to commentary, listening to a deck tech, just playing games. A lot of times, if I pick up a new deck, I'll go to FNM and play, which is not something I normally do. Playing online is great if you can afford to do so.
That's great. That's a lot of good tips on how to widen your ability and keep up on what's going on. That's really cool. So as you have been learning Magic and growing and playing different decks and making adjustments and tweaks here and there, you've had ups and downs like every player has. And we love to learn from maybe some of the times that weren't so hot. So what's your worst Magic moment and what did you learn from that experience?
So there's a few particular games that always stick in my mind, but one particular one, I was playing in a Eternal Master sealed PPTQ. So if you're listening and you're not familiar with Eternal Masters, it was a master set that came out a few years ago with reprints, not just Modern, but Legacy and Commander as well.
Right.
I was playing in the finals, and I had a Call the Skybreaker token, which I believe they were 5/5 elementals with flying, and I had a Maze of Ith. My opponent had just reanimated my Coalition Honor Guard. So I knew that if he attacked, I would have to maze the Coalition Honor Guard, which was not good. It was just a 2/4. I had the card in my hand that made a 5/5 defender. So I was planning to eat the Coalition Honor Guard in combat anyway, so then I couldn't activate Maze of Ith on any of his other attackers. And I've done this before in Commander. What I needed to do to win that game is I needed to Maze of Ith my own attacking flyer at the end of combat when it's still considered an attacking creature so I can have another additional blocker.
Dang, that's a line of play that I don't think I would have thought of.
Yeah, and I thought of it immediately after I passed the turn. And I'm like, oh yeah, I've done this before. And I hadn't done it all tournament, but it was something I had done before. And he got to hit me with his Trigon Predator and blow up Pacifism the next turn, and then I could no longer get in for the last few points of damage.
Dang. So after damage is done, but before you leave combat is when you can do that?
Yes.
Oh, man, so clever. I love little stuff like that because I would not have thought of that, but now I know, and Prodigies, now you know too. That's a very like narrow line of play, but man, when it pops up, I'm sure it does make a difference because then your creature would have been available to block, right?
Yes.
Yeah, man, wow, clever. Oh, and the fact that you had seen that before in like a Commander game, and it just didn't come to mind quick enough. So what did you take away? Like looking back on that, what did you learn and what can you share with us?
Well, this kind of leads into my favorite line of the Magic tournament rules, and that's Magic players who understand the rules better than their opponents should have an advantage.
Hmm.
And when I say that, I'm both speaking as a player and a judge.
Oh, cool. You're a judge. That's awesome.
Yes.
So Magic players who understand the rules better should have an advantage.
Yes.
Hmm. Okay. So familiarize yourself with the rules and it'll serve you well, pretty much.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, that's pretty neat. That is a good takeaway that I hope Prodigy's you're encouraged to go and, you know, familiarize yourself a little bit better. So do you recommend just reading the rules or what's the best way for someone to go about, you know, getting better at the rules of Magic?
So the comprehensive rules are, it's not a very good read.
No, they're not.
But a lot of the sections of the Magic Tournament rules and a lot of sections of the Infraction Procedure Guide, they're very easy to read. Some of the language is kind of, it's slightly like legal speak.
Yeah, legalese, yeah.
But there are abridged versions of the MTR and the IPG that kind of is a bit more of the philosophy behind the documents. And I believe those are on the judge blogs.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's helpful. So yeah, so those are not watered down, but more digestible ways to approach, getting better with the rules.
So like it takes sections of the rules like line by line, and then it expands on them and break down what exactly it means.
That's good. That's really
good. So like a lot of the useful sections are like communication policy, what's considered derived information, what's considered free information. What does that mean? Like free information your opponent's entitled to. And while you don't have to help your opponent like know free information, you can't lie about it. And if they ask you, you do have to say derived information you are not required to help your opponent with. But you can't lie about it if you choose to answer, and you can't misrepresent it incorrectly on purpose.
Right. Hey,
tournament shortcuts are very important.
Hmm.
And they change a lot.
They do?
Well, maybe not a lot. The combat shortcut changed recently.
Okay.
Because of vehicles.
Oh, right. As far as what, passing priority?
Yeah.
Like when you can when you can crew and stuff like that.
Yeah. So it used to be using the combat shortcut would put you, if your opponent did nothing, you would be in declared hackers and it would be too late for you to crew. Now, when you use the shortcut, if your opponent does nothing, the active player has priority in the beginning of combat and can activate abilities and cast instants.
Perfect. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Yeah, cool. So knowing that stuff and diving into it, be familiar, like you said, should give you an advantage because then you'll know what you can do and when. And I think that's a really, really, really good point. Cool. Now, the flip side from our lows are our highs. So what has been your proudest Magic moment to date?
Aside from qualifying for most recent Pro Tour, I did recently, day two, my first limited Grand Prix.
Excellent. That's cool.
Over the past year, limited is something I've been really looking to improve. And so it was M19 sealed. And that was something I put in the work for and I practiced and doing mostly drafts, but limited in general. And then I feel like that tournament, I opened my pool and I built the best deck in my pool instead of what I normally do is I'll build the second or third best deck and then every game two and three, I'll play the what is the best deck instead of registering it immediately.
Okay. So that's good. So you're happy that you made it to the day two for the first time on a limited event and you put in a lot of practice and it paid off. So that's really neat. It's nice when you put things together and you just feel good about it and it works for you. So that's pretty cool. Now, you mentioned qualifying for your first Pro Tour through the RPTQ system, which we brought up in the intro. So let's hone in on that event and just kind of the leading up to it, what you did and how it worked for you. And so the RPTQ that you qualified on was standard, right?
Yes.
Cool. And now you just talked about how you kind of shift decks throughout the seasons, depending on what's good and playing the best, whatnot. So for this particular event, how far in advance did you decide what you were going to play? Talk us through the deck selection process that you went through.
So it was pretty clear to me going into the tournament that Red Black was one of the best decks, if not the best deck. I toyed around with the idea of playing a Turbo Fog deck, if that became absurdly busted, which it is, but it's those style of decks, like Settle the Wreckage decks or just Turbo Fog in generally, if you know how to play around it and play against them, it's really easy to make those decks just dance around what you're doing.
Okay.
So I decided I was going to play black red, and then it was deciding like what my flex slots wanted to be, like how many vehicles was I going to play, was I going to play Hazoret, was I going to play Bowmac Courier, was I going to play Soulscar Mage. There was a lot of decisions moving into it. I tried online a list playing Hazoret and just never got to attack with her.
Mm-hmm.
Turn 4, turn 6, some more cards in hand. So I wasn't, like, I felt comfortable playing black-red, like, aggressively slanted mid-range decks, I think it is my strongest archetype. But I wasn't feeling the Hazoret, and then Jerry Thompson posted in his Patreon list that he would play, and it wasn't playing Hazoret, it was playing main deck Karns. I toyed around with the list. I spent all day at school deciding like how I wanted the sideboard, what I wanted in my sideboard, things I was going to bring in, bring out, and certain matchups to like narrow down the numbers. And I just like shoehorned in the numbers I wanted. I put them somewhere in the 75 to where it would make sense. And then I arrived at a 75. I played it at like the FNM the night 4, and then I just took it to the RPTQ.
That's it? You ran it once, and then you went to the RPTQ?
Well, so that's the thing I was talking about earlier, is that once you get a feel for a lot of standard mm-hmm. macro archetypes, picking up another one is quite easy. So
got it.
This red-black deck is very, very similar to Marta Vehicles with when Gideon Allies Endicar was in standard.
Yeah, that was a good deck.
Yes, and I played that deck extensively during the Mardu copycat meta.
Yeah, I remember that. Okay, cool. So I love how the knowledge kind of builds on itself. Like you said, being involved in standard and being the archetypes kind of have a similar play pattern. So you're able to look at the top decks, choose one of, if not the best deck in your opinion. And because it was a similar play style to a deck that you've done before, while you didn't have a lot of reps with that particular deck, you still have familiarity with how it should match up against the other general archetypes. And that's kind of the process that you went through and it paid off.
Yeah. The transition between decks is easy. Figuring out specific like sideboard plans, that's the hard part of the new meta game.
So the sideboard. So how did you go about, you know, coming up with that? Because that is obviously a big topic of discussion, and a lot of people need help with their sideboard and stuff like that. So what was that process like?
Well, so Jerry T. along was posted a sideboard guide, and so I used that as my starting point. And then with the changes that I made to that 75, I adjusted those and like eschewed some things in certain matchups because I had more cards specifically because of the expected metagame. And then just, you know, sometimes you just have to see if it works.
Mm-hmm.
Or take advice from your friends. Like at the event, one of my friends told me that I should be sideboarding in my copies of Duress against the Flame of Keld deck, which I didn't do when I played it in round 2. And I asked him why, and he said, well, you just Duress the Chandra or the Flame of Keld postboard, and they like just can't win. And I did that. I played against Mono Red 3 times that day. And I explicitly Duress a Chandra or a Flame of Keld twice.
And it worked?
Yeah.
Awesome. Very cool. Very cool. Man, that's so neat. And I love hearing that process and just how it works and stuff. And so you went all the way and conquered the RPTQ and got your Pro Tour invite. What did that feel like when you made it?
It was weird to process.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't they don't have the envelopes anymore. You just get an email. Yeah. And my friend was still playing in his, and he had got a game loss in the top eight for a deck registration error.
Oh, man.
So he had to win both games 2 and 3. He did. But I was watching that. So like my mind was a little off of my accomplishment. Now we both get to go to the PT together. I was slightly just more excited that I didn't have to play Modern for 5 weeks.
and which Pro Tour did it qualify you for? The next one?
Guild of Ravnica in Atlanta.
Okay. Very nice. Oh, man, that's fun. That's really fun. So what part of your preparation do you feel was the most effective?
Well, in Standard especially, I think deck selection and coming prepared with – especially sideboard construction, I think that's the most effective way to gain an edge in Standard.
Yeah, in Standard. Very cool. And now that you have a Pro Tour lined up, how do you plan on preparing for that?
I am going to play the best deck and figure out sideboard plans.
Hey, you know, if it worked before, just do it again, right? So find the best deck and tweak it.
I'm not going to try to break the format. Yeah. I'm one person, maybe like two or three others. Yeah. And breaking the format now is just so hard, especially with the Pro Tour so far out of set release.
Yeah.
Like the decks are going to be known.
Yeah, it's true. So on your journey that you've played Magic with so many different people in so many different venues, what would you say is the biggest mistake that you've seen, the biggest mistake that you observe players make?
I think players make a lot of mistakes. They put a card on their sideboard or in the deck, and they don't know why it's there. They need to just a little bit of forethought ahead of time. It's like, why am I putting, or especially when there's cards with similar effects. So it's like, why am I putting, like, Cast Out in my sideboard over an Ixalan's Binding? Why am I playing Surgical over Rest in Peace in older formats? Like things like that can even give you a clue on how certain matchups go.
Yeah,
I think that's a big mistake that especially newer players make all the time.
Yeah, so they put cards in their deck or sideboard and they don't know why they're there. So, you know, as you kind of alluded to, a lot of people, they'll see a list and they just kind of copy it and they just kind of go and play. That's kind of where you get into the, hey, this card's here, I'm not sure why. So how do you familiarize yourself? How do you figure that out, right? So, you know, you see a deck that you like, you want to try, that's working or whatever, and so you get the deck lists. But now how do you actually go about learning and discovering and figuring out why those cards are there and what they're supposed to be doing, what you're supposed to be doing with them?
I think the biggest resource available to us all is just ask. It's like find the person on Twitter or someone who you think has more knowledge than you do and just ask them. Like Autumn Burchette tweeted out the Tron list that she played at the last European GP, and she had Tarmogoyfs in her sideboard. And I tweet them like, hey, like what are these Tarmogoyfs doing here? Like why do you want them? And like, are they better than this other card that I usually see in Tron sideboards?
Right.
And she answered me.
Yeah. 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 I love that. And, Autumn especially, she's been on the show before. And so it's really cool to, see her do well. And, one thing that I continue to encourage products to do is just what you said, you know, these people that we have on the show, like, or you see somebody that you respect, like ask them, you know, like get out there and strike up a conversation and, you know, Magic players love talking about Magic, so just, you know, like you said, just reach out and ask and see what you can learn and try to, hey, why is this card here or that card there? And I think that's a really good, and there's lots of ways to do that, right? On Twitter, like you mentioned, Facebook groups are another way. We have one for the show, and there's lots of different ways that you can reach out and find people who play a deck or are more knowledgeable, right? Articles you mentioned and Twitch, and there's lots of different ways that you can interact with players of a deck that you're interested in. So that's a really good way to go about it. It's really good tip. So really cool. Really cool. Now, when it comes to learning and growing from Magic, I love how Magic is it's basically a microcosm of life. Like, there's so many cool things that you can learn and apply from magic to life. And so we'd love to learn from you, what is something that you have picked up from magic and you've been able to apply in other areas of your life?
Sometimes you just have to be patient. So, or like, just keep at it. So, like, I think I top aided my first PPDQ like 3 years ago. And I've been fairly consistent. Like, I think last calendar year I had top aided like some like 89%, 90%. And I just like never converted, but you just got to keep playing.
That's PPTQs?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I think my win rate in standard was like 72% at that's at a PPTQ level.
Yeah. Yeah. How would you compare the, I guess, competition at a PPTQ versus an RPTQ versus a Grand Prix of the same format?
So I think PPTQs are obviously the easiest. I think RPTQs are not much harder than PPTQs.
Okay.
Like, you know, if you think about it, the people that are at the RPTQ, are there going to be other PPTQ winners?
Yeah.
And then bronze pro club status members and silver pros. And I think probably most bronze level pros they're just going to be about the PPTQ like winner skill level anyways.
Okay.
Unless, you know, they fell off the train last year, they're getting back on the train. Mm-hmm. But I think that's probably a small minority. So RPTQs, not much harder than PPTQs. And then GPs, I think GP day one is probably around the RPTQ level.
Okay, cool.
I mean, it depends what round it is and what bracket you're in.
Right, right.
But like, I'm talking here like winners metagame, like last three rounds especially.
Mm-hmm.
And then like day two is going to be more in the same until you're in like the XQ bracket going into like round 11 or 12.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. So that's a good way to kind of step it up. And obviously PPTQs are much more frequent and local than GPs are. So someone who is trying to hone their skills and, you know, even qualify for the Pro Tour, the PPTQ system is a really good way to go about it because there's lots of opportunities to play with people you don't know, right? Because if you just stick to your own, you know, play group, you get used to similar patterns, stuff like that. So getting used to sitting across the table from someone you don't know, you know, traveling a little bit, and then playing Magic, all those are really good skills, you know, to hone, and it gives you a path to improve and even make it all the way if you're good enough. So that's pretty cool. And what do you think of the PPTQ system?
I used to love it a lot when I was just wanted to play Magic every weekend.
Uh-huh.
Recently, it's become more of a grind. And like, I'll purposely take weekends off. Like, I'll only do a Saturday instead of a Saturday-Sunday. I used to always do Saturday-Sundays, like, every weekend. And I would travel, like, upwards of 2.5 hours for a PPQ.
Nice.
I don't do that anymore. Transitioning from working full-time to going to school full-time,
yeah.
I don't have the expendable income that I used to. Having some small level of success has also helped to alleviate that expenditure. You know, I'm not allowed to play in PPTQs.
Because you made it in the RPTQ? Is that why? Or?
Yeah, so so when I won this RPTQ, that also qualified me for the next RPTQ.
Oh, yeah.
And it's still modern season. Well, this weekend is the last weekend, and then next weekend is pre-release.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, that's nifty. Yeah. So it's nice, and you don't have to do the, because we've heard from people who made bronze or whatever, and while the PPTQ system is great for those people who are starting out or cutting their teeth or whatever, once you kind of get into it and you're ready to kind of go to the next level, it is nice when you're able to just go through the RPTQ, and you do that either by, you know, getting bronze or by doing qualifying through the RPTQ system. So pretty neat. That is pretty cool. So that's fun that has lined up for you. And you mentioned we talked about your experience with RPTQ and standard and stuff like that. So just kind of circle back to that. What is working in standard right now? Like, what do you think of the format and where do you think it's going, if anywhere, before the next set comes out? So just talk a little bit about standard.
Well, so I don't think there are any more standard tournaments, but obviously I think red-black is the best deck. I think blue-black and the Flamekill decks are very good, but I think red-black is the best. Especially because red-black is one of those like aggressively sided mid-range decks that you can shift the tone of your deck very easily in deck building. Like with Seth Manfield was playing red-black, but he had Cinder Baron and Vraska's Contempt. Or you can go lower red-black and play 8-1 drops, a couple Hazarettes, and then like 0 Unlicense and like even Lightning Strikes if to go face.
Yeah.
It's just very flexible in deck building. And I think that's what makes it the best.
Cool. Very cool. Now, do you have any daily habits or rituals or things that you do on a regular basis that you feel help contribute to your success as a Magic player?
No, I don't really do anything Magic related specifically every day.
Even if it's not Magic related or something, yeah, even if it's a non-magic related practice or something that you feel just kind of helps.
I don't think like specifically. Like I try to, get a lot of sleep and I try to feed myself.
All good things, sustain life. I like that. That's good. How about books? Have you read any books that have influenced your approach or thoughts about, magic and things like that? And again, obviously, it doesn't have to be magic-related books because there's like five of those in the world. So has there been anything that you've been able to apply maybe from your studies that helped as you developed your magic skills?
Well, I've just started studying physics and probability. That hasn't borne any fruit, but I think it will.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you get into hypergeometric distributions.
Yeah.
For magic player, that's just the math of, am I going to draw the card I want when I want to?
Right.
You get into Frank Karsten's, how many mana sources?
Yeah. Love that stuff.
Of a color.
Yeah.
So I think eventually that will bear out, but it hasn't yet. But I did just start. So
fingers crossed. Now, how about resources, magic related resources that you turn to? Where do you go to keep your finger on the pulse on what's going on?
I listen to a lot of content.
Cool. Like which ones?
So I listen to Constructive Criticism, I listen to Pro Points, I listen to the GAM podcast and the Head Games podcast, I listen to Mental Mana, I listen to Lords of Limited, I listen to the LR cast. For fun, I listen to the Vorsos cast.
Oh, there you go. I like that stuff. That's cool, man. So you being in a podcasting and you listen to a lot of the ones that are out there, that's really good. That's really, really good. Which one, I guess I can't say favorite because they probably all give you different insights or whatever. I guess I won't ask what's your favorite one. I'm sure each one has its different, obviously they have their different niches and kind of help you as a well-rounded magic player pick up, different things here and there. So that's pretty cool. That is pretty cool. So what other events do you have coming up? We love kind of keeping track on past guests and you obviously have the Pro Tour. We have any other events coming up?
So this weekend, I'm actually judging a modern event in Chicago.
Fun.
It's part of a local year-round tournament series. The store is called Nerd Rage Gaming in Chicago, and they have this is going to be a championship trial, and then that will culminate in December to a end-of-the-year championship. I think they're giving out, I don't want to give a number and be wrong, It's several thousand dollars.
Yeah, but that's fun when stores do that. When I lived in California, my local store did something like that. And that's, I think it's really fun when stores are able to kind of put on their own little local thing. That's cool. That's really, really cool. Well, sweet. So you have that coming up. And then obviously, so your next big event for you is the Pro Tour itself?
Yeah. I want to go to the limited GP that's before the Pro Tour that's also in Atlanta, but I don't think that's going to be financially feasible. But I do plan on going to the standard GP the weekend following the Pro Tour.
Very cool. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, cool. As we kind of turn the corner here and move on to the home stretch, I want to remind prodigies out there, you want to connect with Josh, you can do so on Twitter at @agentofblight. So agent_of_blight. So reach out to him there on Twitter. Say thanks for being on the show, ask him questions, and that's where you can interact with him. So Josh, once again, as we close things up, we would love to hear one last parting piece of guidance from you. Either something you already said you want to emphasize or something new you'd like to leave with us here at the end.
So I was thinking about one of your previous questions that I don't think I had something for. Maybe I did. But I was listening to the Mental Mana podcast, and one of the things that's helped me a lot in particularly tense situations, life decisions, I think they call it conscious breathing. And it's just when you consciously breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth. And then also they've talked about the way you sit in your chair. So previously, especially in long tournament days, I've always sat in the chair, and you know how the chairs are. They're not very good.
Yeah.
With my legs tucked underneath the chair. And they recommend having your legs just straight out in front of you, because having your legs tucked under the chair will cut circulation.
Man,
and
I love that.
I've been trying to do that, and I think it has helped, even if just a little bit. That's still a non-zero amount.
Yeah, yeah. It's just those little, I love those non-game considerations. People who think about that stuff, like how you sit and breathe, and obviously there's a lot to think about in Magic, not least of all is the game itself. But if you can kind of do these other things and make them get to the point where they're unconscious decisions, then you have it going. You have that stuff going for you while you're able to focus in on the game itself, which is the ultimate or the important part. So that's really neat. I love that. Absolutely love that. So conscious breathing and how you sit, for sure. So Josh, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. You're on the up and up, and it's so fun to chat with somebody who's just a few steps ahead of us. And I want to thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experiences with us today. You're a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Josh, thank you so much for being a guest here on the show. The Prodigies and I wish you the best of luck. And Prodigies, of course, you can get the show notes over at mtgpro2.com/Josh Collier. You can find a synopsis of what we talked about and links to any resources that were mentioned. So once again, before we close out, I want to say thank you to the patrons and thank you to Paragon City Games for their support of the show. Patrons, you mean the world to me, and it's because of you that this show exists. And Prodigies, if you want to see Magic at its best, then go ahead and check out the Magic World Championship this weekend. It's always fun to see the best players playing Magic, so let's support them, tune in, and just see what's going on, and maybe we can chat about it in the Facebook group next week. That'd be a lot of fun. So anyways, best of luck to you. Love connecting with you, and I can't wait to do that again real soon. And until then, I'm Sean of the Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.